Welcome back to the Just for Today podcast, where we dive deep into uncomfortable topics with zero filters. Last episode, I talked to you guys about the day that Eric died and how I found out and all that fun stuff. Well, today I figured I would talk a little more about what happened after he died. I feel like it's not really talked a lot about, you know, like your person dies and then you're kind of just like, well, what's next? But there's a lot of things you have to do, and it kind of sucks because you don't want to do anything because your person just died. But you gotta do what you gotta do. So yeah, Eric was working. Don't mind my teething dog that will not let me put him down. Anyways, so Eric was working when he died. He was on a move from California to Arizona, so he did have a box truck full of some customer's house. You know, the next day we had to go pick it up, had to go pick up the truck, had to finish the job, had to figure out who was going to finish the job. I did have to contact the customer and let them know, which they kind of already knew because Eric's friend that lives in Arizona who was going to help him finish the move had already contacted the customer, so she had already known when I called her. So get to the hotel, pick up the box truck. I have to go to the police station and courtside to pick up all his belongings, which sucked, but yeah. At this point, I still don't know anything because they didn't give me any information on like how he was found or what was found in the room with him or anything like that. I start calling the funeral home and asking questions, and after a while, I had the police officer call me back and be like, oh, I heard that you've been asking questions, and I'm like, well, yeah, because my husband just died, and, like, you're not giving me any info. Like, I'd like, you know, at least the basics, like, where was he? Like, was he laying in the bed? Was he on the floor? Was he doing this? Was he doing that? Just a little bit of kind of what the room looked like when you went in there. And that is when she told me that he was found on the bathroom floor in a praying position. There were drugs and paraphernalia on the bathroom sink. The bed hadn't really looked like it'd been slept in. Like, she said the covers were just kind of like pushed over to the side, kind of looking like someone was getting ready to get in bed. She said the TV was on and his phone was on the nightstand, but he was found in the bathroom. And that is why I believe that he died the night before, because the TV was on. She also told me that when they found his body, it looked like he had been there for over 12 hours. So yeah, everything that they found makes me believe that he died Saturday night, because I had just the weirdest thing happen on Saturday night. It was like 11:30, and I swear I like heard Eric's voice say like good night or goodbye or something like that. I can't remember. And I just had this really weird feeling in my stomach, and I was just scared. Like, I didn't want to call him. He still hadn't called me that night, and I felt so off about it, but something in me was just like, just leave it. And kind of the same the next morning, like when I woke up and there was still no calls from him, I think I was just afraid of the truth. In the back of my mind, I feel like this was always a fear of mine. So when it actually became reality, I just didn't want to believe it. So yeah, anyways, she told me where they found him, all that fun stuff. I asked her what the drug was that she found. She obviously couldn't tell me exactly what it was, but she did describe it for me, and she said it was like a rock substance, a white rock substance that was like the size of a quarter. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, that's meth, but he doesn't do meth. Like, meth isn't his choice of drug. At this point, I had already known, because when I went to pick up his stuff from the police station, it had like obviously his phone. He had an iPad for work, a laptop, and all that stuff. And I went through his phone and I found nothing on his phone because all his messages, like to the dealer and all that, were deleted. Like, he deleted it right away. But on his iPad, if you were to delete messages from your iPhone, it wouldn't delete off of the iPad. So I went on the iPad and I'm going through these messages and I found the one where he asked for fentanyl. Yeah, I like told the officer, I was like, I know exactly where he got it from, who he got it from, where this person lives, this person's name. Like, I have, you know, the text messages saying that he's going to pick it up from him, and, you know, like what time he got there and all this stuff. And she basically kind of just said that, like, if you want to reach out, the officers in California, since this dealer lives in California and this whole thing happened in California, but she's an Arizona officer because he died in Arizona. But she was like, if you want to, you know, like reach out to them, reach out to drug enforcement and all this stuff. And she's like, but honestly, I'm going to tell you right now to not get your hopes up because they don't really do anything about it. So that was very disappointing because it's like, I know who this person is. I know like where he lives. Like, I have all the info ready for you and just nothing, just another person dead. And we're just going to let these dealers just keep on living the dream. So I'm in Arizona and I'm in contact with the funeral home, and they told me that he went to go get an autopsy all the way in Tucson. So I'm waiting for him to be done with the autopsy so they can bring him back to the Phoenix area so I can see him, because at this point I feel like absolutely none of it is real because I still have not seen his body. And the last time I saw him, he was very much alive. So yeah, it's just like, you know, one of those things that you have to see it to believe it. Like, there's just no freaking way that my husband's dead. I was still in shock at this point. So it's Monday night. I go to sleep. I wake up Tuesday. He's not back yet. And, you know, I have like Emmy calling me, asking me, you know, where's dad? Where are you? When are you guys coming home? Because I still didn't tell my kids because I did not know how to tell them. Wake up Tuesday. Then we do get a call from someone, the funeral home. I don't know at this point. Like, I really don't remember much. Everything is just a blur. So even like the way I remember things, I'm like, I wonder if that's really how things went down because I was in shock and just kind of survival mode. I don't know what, like, if there's things that my mind made up versus like the truth and what actually happened and what didn't happen. I don't know. Someone calls, the funeral home calls, and they're like, you'll be able to see him on Thursday. It's Monday. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, why? So anyways, I'm like, okay, well, I have to go home. I can't stay in Arizona. Like, I have to go back and tell my kids. So we drive back. We flew out Thursday super early in the morning to go back to see his body. Now, in between those 2 days, Tuesday night after we drove home, you know, my kids are waiting for me when I get inside, and I walk in and Emmy's like, where's daddy? Like, so excited. And I was like, okay. I was like, we have to talk. So I take her to her room and she's like super excited. And mind you, the whole way there and the whole way back, I'm like thinking about my kids, thinking about how do I tell them? What do I say to not fuck them up? Like, how do I make this go as smoothly, sounds so dumb, but as smoothly as possible for them? And everything I read basically said, like, you just have to be honest. Like, you can't be like, oh, daddy fell asleep and never woke up, or, you know, like he passed away or any of those things. It's like, you have to be really direct, no matter the age of the child. So I was. So yeah, I told her we had to talk. She's super excited. We go in her room and I'm like, okay, Emmy, I have to tell you something really sad. And her face just like went from happy, excited to I'm about to see dad to just like blink. And I say, daddy's dead. which means his body stopped working. He's no longer breathing. He can't eat. He can't drink. And she looks at me and she goes, well, how long is he going to be dead for? And I said, no, it's not. It's not. He can't come back. He's dead and he will be dead forever. And we cried. We cried. She was 4 and a half. Like, I mean, there's only so much she understood. Although I tried my hardest to, like, explain to her what death was and you can't die and, like, come back to life and all this stuff. And for the most part, she understood. But, like, for weeks and months following, she would just make these little comments like, oh, Mom, like, maybe we should go to the grocery store, and if we're shopping for long enough, then Dad will come back home. And, you know, I'd be like, no, it doesn't work like that. And she'd be like, I know, but just maybe, like, maybe. Or she'd be like, oh, can we, like, on his birthday? She was like, it's just a special day. Like, can we go visit him, like, just today? And it'd just be, like, repetition and repetition and, you know, like, basically just denying her every time she wanted to see her dad. Jax and Riley were really young, but I still felt the need to have to tell them. So I remember I'm putting Jax down for bed, and he asks for daddy, and I did the same thing I did with Emmy. Like, I have to tell you something. I have something really sad to tell you. Obviously, he's 2 and a half, so it went a little different with him, but I told him the same thing, you know, like, daddy's dead, which means his body's not working, all this stuff. And he kind of just looks at me and smiles, and he's like, I'll see daddy tomorrow. And I'm like, okay. I was defeated at that point. I just couldn't keep going. But every single day for, like, the next year, Jax would ask me where his dad was, and I had to repeat to him every single day that his dad was dead. And that was hard. Riley, I feel like she was just, I still had to tell her, but she didn't know anything. So that happened in between those days. And so Thursday morning, I fly back out with my dad. And we got, like, the earliest flight, which was like 5:30 or something like that. And oh my gosh, I remember that whole plane ride. I was, like, crying hysterically. And there was this guy sitting in front of us who kept, like, turning around and, like, looking in between, like, the little, like, the seats, the little spot where there is in between the seats. And in my head, I'm like, he probably thinks I'm, like, getting kidnapped. He probably thinks, like, something crazy is happening. And in my head, I'm like, how many times have I been on a plane with someone who's, like, going to visit, like, going to a funeral, going to go see their husband's dead body, like, all these things in my mind. I'm just like, this is, you never know when someone is going through it. And I remember having that mindset for, like, months after Eric died. Like, how many times have I been standing next to someone or been doing something to someone who was going through what I'm going through right now, like, planning, I mean, not a funeral, because I didn't have a funeral, but, like, planning the next steps on what to do after someone dies, after their husband dies, after their wife dies, kids, grandparents, parents. It's just, your mindset shifts into something else after going through that. Like, you just see the world in a completely different lens. And I remember I would constantly think that everywhere I'd go, or, like, if someone was in a bad mood or something was going on, I'd be like, well, I wonder why, like, what's happening in their life that's making them feel this way. So anyways, we finish the plane ride, we get to Arizona, kind of just waiting for the funeral home to call me and be like, okay, you can come see him. Now, I didn't do, like, a viewing or anything for anyone else because, first of all, I didn't see him, so I didn't know how he looked, and I also just, everything happened so fast. I did not, there was no, like, I didn't plan anything. I knew he did want to be cremated. That was the only thing I was certain of, like, when he died, is that he would be cremated, because I knew that's what he wanted. I didn't have any idea like, I didn't know anything about planning a funeral or a memorial or a celebration of life or any of this stuff. I didn't do that. That was never even a thought in my mind. Like, I'm barely surviving this. I'm not thinking of anyone else. I'm just trying to get through the next second of this day. So I go to the funeral home, and his parents met me there. His mom had already told me that she did not want to see his body. And I do remember her kind of like telling me, you know, like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, it might scar you. And she was speaking from experience because her husband had also died when she was in her 30s, Eric's dad, and she said she did view his body, and it kind of just, like, haunted her, and I was, like, just set on it. Like, there was absolutely no way you were going to change my mind. I had to see him because in my mind, he was still alive, so in order for me to process this death, that was, like, the first step that I had to do to not kind of move on, but, like, move past this part of, like, is he dead? Is he not dead? This isn't real. This isn't actually happening. Because that's what was going through my mind, like, for these 4 or 5 days, is, like, this is a joke. Like, this is such a, like, this is a joke. I'm going to go in. He's going to be alive. I'm going to see him again. So, yeah, there was absolutely no changing my mind. I'm, like, I'm going to see his body. Like, no one else has to go in there with me. I don't want anyone else in there with me. Like, I just want my time with him. Also, between these 2 days where I'm waiting to see his body, I, like, printed out a whole bunch of pictures that I wanted cremated with him. I picked out an outfit for each kid that he had, like, a special, like, he had a picture with the kid in this outfit to be cremated with him. And then I picked his outfit, and Emmy drew him a picture, and the picture Emmy actually drew him, I have tattooed on my arm. And it's just like, it's not the whole picture that she made for him, but, like, her picture was a big house, and it said, "I love you, Daddy," and she drew our family in the house. And that I actually had with me, and I gave to him once I saw him. So I know he was cremated with that as well. And I wrote him a letter, like, 3 or 4 pages, probably longer. So I gave that to him. Now, I didn't know what to expect. I've never seen a dead body. I had no idea. So they told me that he was ready, and there was someone, like, that worked at the funeral home that was going to go in with me. And I was like, okay, well, they can, like, walk with me to the door, but I don't think I need anyone, like, there with me. Like, I'll be okay. And so I walk in, and I am not kidding you, the second I walk in the door and I see Eric's body, I literally heard his voice saying, "Finally, get over here." And I, like, felt, like, what was, like, arms, like, wrap around me. And I remember turning around, and I was like, "I don't need you in here." Because they were going to follow me just in case I, like, you know, couldn't handle it and collapsed or whatever. It was hysterical. But that was the best I had felt since that Sunday, finding out that he was no longer alive. I do not know how to explain it. I have never felt so much peace surrounding me. And I just remember thinking in my head, like, oh my gosh, like, this is Eric telling me that he is finally at peace. Like, this is such, it feels so weird to say, because I'm literally standing in front of my husband's body, and I'm telling you that that is the most at peace that I've ever felt him. But the feeling, I don't know how to explain it, other than if you know, you know. If you've been in this situation, then you know. And if you don't, and if I had it and I was hearing someone say this, I'd probably be like, yeah, she's crazy. But it was just an overwhelming an overwhelming feeling of peace. And all I could think about was, Eric has been fighting these demons for years, like for years. And I feel like probably since he was a child, he has been fighting these demons. And I know he was exhausted. And I know he was exhausted because he would tell me, like, he would tell me how exhausted he was of this addiction, of all of these problems that he had that he just felt like he couldn't overcome. And I feel like in this moment, he was no longer fighting any of those. And I just felt so much peace. I didn't even cry. Like, there wasn't even a tear shed when I was in there, other than when they told me I had to leave. That's when I started crying. I'm so glad I went to go see his body, because that made me feel, that made me know that he was in a better place and he was finally feeling at peace with himself. So yeah, I stayed in there. I don't even know how long I stayed in there. I literally just talked to him the whole time. I was like apologizing to him. Just like, I'm sorry that this happened to you, and I'm sorry that, you know, these demons were a part of your life, and just kind of telling him how I was going to do things from there on with the kids. And I made him promises that I would never allow, like, you know, certain things to be done to the kids, or for people to treat the kids certain ways. And leaving was so hard. I remember I was like in there and I'm like kissing him like the whole time. I'm like holding his hand, kissing his lips, kissing him all over the face. And I'm just like, maybe if I just kiss him enough, like, he'll kiss me back. Just, he'll do something. I did put a silicone ring back on his finger. So that was that experience. I remember when I left, like, my cousin was like, I think she, like, saw him because he was at the end of her room. So she was at the door and she was like, I was kind of just waiting there just in case, like, you needed me so I could, like, go in at any second if I had cried or, like, you know, like, started going crazy. And she was like, but I did see him and he, like, looked so good. And I was like, he did. Like, he looked so good. He looked, like, he had some bruising on his nose, like, right here in the front, and I feel like it was from, because when they found him, they said he was, like, in a praying position with his head down, so I'm, obviously, like, all the blood, like, drained to his nose, so that, like, looked a little bruised, but other than that, he really looked so good. And, yeah, after that, I was like, okay, you know, he's ready to be cremated. I didn't, like I said, I was selfish. I didn't think of anyone else. I would not have let my kids see him. Even if we were to have had, like, a funeral, I don't think I would have done, like, an open casket or anything like that, because I, especially Emmy, like, I didn't want her to see him that way, and I think that they were so young that they would really, like, try to wake him up, and that's just not something I would have done, but obviously to each their own. Also, I think it's different if, like, you have a partner that's, like, sick, right? Like, and you know that they're dying, to kind of, like, say your goodbyes. Maybe I would have let the kids see him if that were the case, but yeah. So anyways, and I remember, like, flying back out home that night, and I'm, like, sitting with my dad, and I'm just telling him, like, all my fears of life now that my husband's dead, and, you know, how I'm, like, terrified of screwing my kids up, and how I'm just gonna be the worst mom ever, and I'm, like, terrified that they're gonna become addicts, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I just kept going and going and going, and my dad just starts crying, and he's like, you are the strongest person I've ever met. He was like, I was expecting you to, like, just completely lose your shit when you saw him and, like, go crazy. And you were so calm and so, like, you just, like, weren't crazy. It was like, I thought we were literally gonna have to, like, rip you out of the room and, like, all this stuff. And he's like, just the fact that, you know, and everything that we've been doing in just these past few days, like, you always bring up your children and always are like concerned about them and like, what am I going to do with them? Like, how do I tell Emmy? How do I do this? I need to do this the right way. I can't, you know, like you're so concerned about not messing them up. They're always like a first in your mind that like that goes to show you like how good of a mom you are and how strong you are. And I also like remember telling him that I feel like it's Eric. Like I feel like he kind of prepped me for this, and that also like felt so weird saying, but Eric also lost his dad a day before his fifth birthday. His dad died, and I just remember like we had a lot of conversations about death and just about his like upbringing and what he kind of like didn't like that was done and what he wished would have been done and what he did like that was done, and like just all these things about, you know, his upbringing, his childhood, his young adult life and all this stuff. And that was something that we like often talked about, was like, if I die, then this and that, or like, you know, just because it did happen to him, so we knew that it was a possibility. So yeah, I was like telling my dad, like, I know exactly what Eric would want me to do in this situation or this situation or this situation, because he actually told me, like, I would know what he would want me to do with a kid if this happened, or if someone treated them this way, or this, because he told me. And I was like, so I literally feel like I was prepped for this situation, and I'm doing things the way Eric would want me to do things. And I feel like I was so set on that in my mind, because that was also a way that I could honor him and I continue to honor him. So yeah, as weird as it sounds, I feel like I was prepped for this. I don't really know how else to say it. So we go back home, and I just, like, am still surviving. I'm barely surviving. I still lived about 45 minutes from my parents at this point. They basically just kept my children, and I would go home. I'd be home most days, because I just felt like that's where I felt closer to Eric. But I mean, when I say I was home, I was like literally in bed, just like, you know, contemplating on whether I wanted to live or not. My parents are absolute angels on earth. They took care of me. They would literally drive to my house every night to sleep with me, so I did not sleep alone, because I was so stubborn and I was like, no, I don't want to go to your house, like I want to sleep at my house. So they would drive back to my house every night. I mean, my mom had to be home by 7 a.m so she'd have to leave at like 4 or 5 in the morning the next day to be at work. Same thing, come to my house that night. Like, never once complained about it, never once made me feel any type of way about it. They just were there without me ever having to ask. That is something I will never, ever, ever be able to repay them for. And I know they will say that I don't owe them anything for that, but I really do owe them everything for that, because if I've learned anything going through this and meeting people in similar situations, is that a lot of people don't have a village and a lot of people don't have support. And man, I had it. Like, I had a freaking village. Not only my parents, like all my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, they came out the next weekend to be with me. They would do like fundraisers and make food and sell this and that to like raise money for me. I mean, they just showed up. Like, they showed up without a doubt, no questions asked. They were all there. I know that's what family is for, but I know that's not how everyone's family is. And for that, I am so grateful to know that I have my village. Now, after, like, shortly after that, I also realized, like, I don't want to live here anymore. I moved out of California when I was 20, and I know I shared a little bit about this on my Instagram, but when I was 20, I did attempt suicide, and my parents did find me, and I was hospitalized. I was put on a 5150 hold, and then a few months after that, I moved out of California, and I came to Arizona. This is where I met Eric. This is where we created our family. We had moved back to California because it was his idea for work. I know I mentioned all that before. I didn't want to be there. Like, California just is not up. It's just holds so much trauma for me. But I did it because I thought it would be better. You know, like, it's not just me in a marriage. So obviously you know, like, my husband had a plan and all this for his business, so we did that. So as soon as he died, I'm like, okay, now another trauma's here. Like, now my freaking husband dies while I'm living here, and, you know, I know it has, like, nothing to do with the state, but it just, I did not want to be there. And so our lease was up in September, and I had talked to my landlord, and my landlord, too, was, like, so sweet. He, like, cut my rent. Just, they were really, really understanding, and I ended up cutting the lease short. I think I ended it in, like, July. So the last week of July was when I moved out of my house, and I was set on moving back to Arizona, and my parents really tried everything in their power to convince me to stay in California. I mean, they were like, well, you can live here. You can have our house. We'll go get another house. Like, we'll help you pay for rent, like, all this stuff. And in my mind, I'm like, California is so expensive. I don't even have a job right now. Like, I was a stay-at-home mom. We didn't have life insurance. We had nothing. Like, we had some savings, but it's like, I can't afford to live here as a solo mom. There's, like, absolutely no way. If anything, I'll barely be able to afford my life in Arizona. So I was just set, you know, like, I wanted to go back there. Arizona was where I felt closest to Eric. This is where we had all our close friends and our close family, and other than my parents, of course. I think that was also really hard for my parents because they obviously saw the worst of me. Like, I could barely get up and take care of myself. So they're thinking, like, how are you going to live 5 hours from us and take care of yourself and your three children when we can't even see you take care of yourself right now? Which is very valid. But, you know, also I will say I am a little stubborn, and once my mind is made up, my mind is made up. And I was moving back to Arizona. So I did end up staying with them for a little bit because I moved out in July. I stayed with them, but I would go back and forth from their house to my cousin's house, who lived out here in Arizona. So I was literally going back and forth. And at that point, like, none of my kids were in school, so it was fine. I would even leave them, like, at my parents' house and come out here for a little bit, like a few days or a week. And then I was like, okay, like, I'm gonna start looking for my own place. And mind you, I still hadn't spent a night alone since Eric died, other than one night, and that's another story. But even when Eric was alive, like, I always had roommates, never lived by myself. Even I remember, like, before Eric moved in to the house with me and my cousins, like, sometimes I would even, like, text my cousin and make her come sleep in bed with me because I'm just, like, a big baby. And so, yeah, never lived by myself. And I know I wouldn't be living with myself because I'd have my three kids, but it's just not the same. So I was like, okay, like, I think I'm ready. I just missed my space. I missed it all, especially having three kids. Like, we needed our space back. So I finally started looking for places, and in the end of November, it was around Thanksgiving, is when I finally got my own place. I found someone who was willing to give me a chance. I told them my story, but I was like, I can pay. I will make all the payments. I don't have pay stubs to show you because I don't, like, I haven't worked, you know, but I was making, like, some money. I had money from the GoFundMe and my Social Security. So I was like, I have enough even for, like, a year, like, but I'm still going to be, like, getting on my feet and finding a job and doing all this. So yeah, she took a chance on me, and I did it. I had to do it. I literally had no choice but to do it. It's just like when everyone's like, oh my gosh, like these are my favorite comments. And when I say favorite, I'm kind of being sarcastic. And if you've said this to me, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not, you know, nothing against you. But some of my favorite comments are like, oh my God, if my husband died, like, I don't think I could go on. I don't know how you did it. Like, I would die. I would this, I would that. It's like, bitch, you think I didn't want to die? You think I wanted to keep going? You think I wanted to do that? No. I literally had no choice but to keep going because I had children and because what else am I supposed to do? Like, I literally had no choice but to do it. So I know that's like a comment that everyone goes to, and I know it's like said out of love. So I'm, like I said, if you've said that to me before, I'm not, it's fine. I'm not talking about you. I'm not trying to be mean. I just always thought it was so funny when I would receive that comment, and I still do all the time. And it's like, you know, I did it because I had to. I really didn't have a choice. But yeah, so then I got my own place. I started getting my shit together and it felt good. It was scary at first because, like I said, I never lived alone. But then I started to believe, you know, like another comment I would always get is like, you're so strong, you're so strong. And I'd always be like, I'm not strong, I'm just like surviving. But now it's like I look back and I look back at myself, you know, shortly after Eric died versus now, and seeing the growth and everything that I have gone through. And it's like, yeah, you know what? I am strong. I am strong and I am proud of myself and I did it. And I'm so proud that I can sit here and say that I did it. And I will continue to do it for my children and for myself, bring you all along with me. And this is my message to you. If you are in the beginning of your grief journey and you're sitting here thinking like, there's no way I can do it. Like, I cannot do it. There's not much more I can take. You can do it. Take it one day at a time, just for today. Get through it just for today. Tomorrow's a new day. We'll deal with tomorrow. But just for today, take a breath and you can do it. Thanks for hanging out with me today, guys. If this episode resonated with you today, please make sure you send it to someone who you think needs to hear it. And if you want to be a part of these conversations, make sure to subscribe. I'll see you guys next time. Until then, just for today, keep going.